Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, March 25th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. You need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled
BRINSEA. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I cannot believe it is Monday, March 25th. Where did March go? I mean, I know we've been busy here around the homestead getting ready for our new pea pod to arrive, and now that she's here, it seems like it's still going 90 miles an hour. I guess I just continued working on that honey to-do list that I had in preparation of the pea pod arriving. But when I was going through and changing the date in the show intro today, I was like, the 25th of March, which basically means we're almost, I mean, April. Where's 2013 gone? I just cannot believe it. I think there's a country song out there where you just blink and next thing you know, it's the next year, and your kids go from 6 days to 6 years to 16 years to 26 years, and then you're retiring and everything else. I mean, but this year, 2013 so far has gone by so fast. I can't believe it. I mean, we're celebrating, Easter this coming up weekend, and next thing you know, we'll be celebrating Christmas. Next thing you know, we'll be saying, hey, and we'll be taking next week off for the Christmas holiday. It's going to seem like it's going to get here like tomorrow. It's going to be crazy. So thank you very much for tuning in today. I hope you had a blessed weekend. We had a pretty good weekend here, even with the weather. Last night, boy, it was windy as crazy here. But we got another task done here on the homestead. Back when we first moved down here, I got one of those, I guess it's a 10x10, for all practical purposes, chain link dog kennel with the door on it, actually for the goats to put in the barn that we had at the time. It has since been torn down, and we've got other applications for what that barn was used for. But it's starting to get warmer, and when we lived in Atlanta, we had a sunroom for the dogs specifically. And so here they've been kind of in a room that we've kind of designated the dining room, but right now it's just storage. But as it's getting warmer, I noticed here comes the hair. They're starting to shed. So I'm like, Jen, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of the hair. It's hard to keep the house clean, hair running down the hallway whenever I open the back door. The dogs are going outside. So we got the 10x10 kennel up yesterday, got some cypress mulch down in there. I had two dog houses. I mean, it didn't cost me a dime. It was just a matter of labor. So I got that up yesterday. It looks really good. I'm pleased with it. And now I'll try to hook up an automatic water for them for these hot summer months that are coming up here in the Deep South. They're just in it basically overnight. The whole lot is fenced in with a farm fence. So I let them out in the morning. They're already out, and they got full roam of the property that the house sits on. And soon we'll have hopefully a fence around the back garden lot where our orchard will be and our garden and the coop. So we'll get moved down there from up here and things like that. So, but I hope you had a great weekend. We did too here, and got another thing off the honey to-do list. That is for sure. I've got a great show lined up for you today. Of course, being Monday, we've got Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. He's going to be joining us here a little bit. He noticed over the weekend
I posted a question of the day. Do you add anything, any supplements or vitamins, minerals, electrolytes to your water? And if so, what? And so he saw that and he said, you know, that might be a good segue into a show. So today is just that. We're going to talk about additives that you may choose or may not to choose to put into your water for your chickens, whether it be electrolytes, vitamins, amino acids, probiotics, whatever the case may be. We'll talk about that, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the do's and don'ts. He also has some other information he's going to share with us probably first before we get to the topic. And I just got an email from him a few minutes ago, and he is, and you know, Peter Brown, he's very passionate about what he does. He's good at what he does. And so we may have a little episode of Blogbusters here on this episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We do that on occasion when we see bad information on blogs or forums. And he sent me an email today about something he read on a blog or forum, and it's just crazy information. So just beware. It's like Twinkies prevent cancer because I eat a Twinkie every day and don't have cancer. So that, by golly, must be true. So, you know, we'll have maybe a little segment of Blogbusters today. And but first, I want to get to some chickens in the news that I posted on our Facebook page yesterday, I believe it was, when it came out. And I thought it was very interesting and wanted to share it with you today because it's not too long of a chickens in the news article. And it did have a slurry of comments yesterday once I posted it. So I'm going to go ahead and click on this. You can see it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. And this came to us, it was on the 24th, which was yesterday. It was through NPR, NPR National Public Radio, and it was under their The Salt column, What's on Your Plate. And the title is Backyard Chickens, Cute, Trendy, Spreaders of Salmonella. Yep, and so when I read that, I thought, well, Easter must be upon us. I have received an email from the CDC already, my contact there, and they would like to come on the show sometime this week and talk about the risks of salmonella in baby chicks because Easter's coming up, and we have never, ever condoned baby chicks or baby rabbits for Easter. Never, not once on this radio show at all. It is wrong, in my opinion. Again, if you've been doing your research and want to hop into the backyard chicken movement or raise rabbits or what have you, that's fine. You've done your research and it just so happens now's the time you're getting started. Great. But to just run out and say, ooh, I'm going to have a cute photo op with my little kids and get a baby chick here, a baby chick there, a baby rabbit, and you're not in it for the long haul, 10, 15 years, then don't do it. Because we don't, you know, it puts a burden on everybody else. What, you know, oh, this is too much work than I thought, but at least I got some good photo pictures for the rest of their life. No, it doesn't work that way. So it must be Easter because we're starting to see articles about salmonella and baby chicks. Again, the title of this is Backyard Chickens, Cute, Trendy, Spreaders of Salmonella. Backyard chickens have become a coveted suburban accessory, one that packages cuteness, convenience, and local food production in one fluffy feathered package. But animal husbandry can be a nasty business, a fact that's often glossed over by poultry partisans like Martha Stewart and New Yorker writer Susan Orlean. Morbidity and Mortality Weekly report doesn't do gloss. In its latest edition, its chronicle of all things contagious reports on a 2012 salmonella outbreak among 195 people in 27 states. Most had contact with live chickens, and many had purchased the birds from an Ohio mail-order hatchery for backyard flocks. This outbreak investigation identified the largest number of human illnesses ever linked to contact with live poultry during a single outbreak. The MMWR report concludes, and it underscores the ongoing risk for human salmonella linked to backyard flocks. The hatchery that was the source of the birds participated in a program to eliminate the spread of salmonella strains that caused illness in birds, but doesn't certify the poultry as free from strains that could infect people. But it's no surprise to anybody in the zoonotic diseases world that chickens can spread human disease. Remember those warnings not to buy baby chicks for Easter presents? One big reason is that they can spread salmonella. Humans can get salmonella from chickens by touching them or their manure, according to the CDC. The birds can spread the bacteria when they look healthy. The agency says the best way to reduce risk is to wash your hands after handling birds. Duh. Okay, that was my little additive there. Duh. And make sure children wash their hands, too. Duh. Duh. Public health officials are also worried about backyard flocks and bird flu. I don't know many public officials personally being involved with USDA. But here, public health officials are also worried about backyard flocks and bird flu. The USDA provides tips on how to keep domestic fowl from playing a role in a future global pandemic with no less than backyard poultry expert Andy Schneider, a.k.a. the Chicken Whisperer, as their spokesperson. Blah. What a way to enter that. Public health officials are also worried about backyard bird flu? No. Okay. Buying eggs from the supermarket is a relatively recent invention. As Orlean has pointed out, so maybe the return of backyard chickens is a return to normal, and that's normal, germs included. Okay, and that's the article. I mean, that's it. So that comes to us from NPR. Backyard chickens, cute, trendy spreaders of salmonella. So again, we've had plenty, and even very recently, we've had plenty of shows regarding salmonella here. Recently, so it's go back and listen to the archives. I know Dr. McRae, poultry scientist and professor, has done on salmonella. I know Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, has done a show very recently on salmonella. We just talked about it, and it's Easter. What more can you say? It is Easter. Okay, and so that's going to have everybody coming out of the woodwork. They pick on chickens because it's Easter. Okay, maybe this summer when everybody's vacationing in Florida, they'll put out all these press releases about salmonella and baby turtles. Little baby turtles you can buy in all the souvenir stores in Florida, it seems like. You're going down the strip there in Daytona Beach. Live turtles for sale, live turtles. Okay, all those kids for their birthday that want lizards. Okay, what about all the people that have dogs? Remember the salmonella scare, I believe it was, from dog food? The parents and kids were refilling the bowls of dog food and getting it on their hands and putting their hands in their mouth. So, you know, dogs, chickens. I wasn't going to say that, Bard Rock, but I'll let you do it. I wasn't going to go there live, but you posted in the chat room. So there you have it. Maybe Bard Rock's onto something. So the issue there is, you know, just it's elite. The issue here is the salmonella, of course, and it's a simple solution. Like I posted on it's on my Facebook page, Walter, and where you can just copy and paste that and bring it on over. So the I don't remember anyway. Wash your hands. I mean, how simple is that? Wash your hands. You know, you pick up a dog turd in your yard. What are you going to wash your hands, right? So you're playing with your baby chicks. You're taking care of them, changing their waters out in their feeders. You're going to wash your hands. You know, just like when we did the USDA webinar earlier, Dr. Smeltzer, you know, says, you know, chicks do not belong in cribs or in strollers or in baby beds or, you know, anything like that. You know, sure, you know, if you do the photo op with the baby chick, oh, we got baby chicks, we're going to be, you know, the homestead, oh, we're doing backyard poultry and all these great benefits, that's fine. You know, you want your kids to be involved. I get that. Wash your hands. How hard is that? So, but it is Easter, so you're going to start seeing these articles come out, and we may have the CDC on this week have them do a little partial segment on the salmonella with the Easter. Because let's face it, folks, you're not going to stop these people from going out and buying a few chicks for the photo op for Easter, and then just I can't take care of them. Let me go find a home for them on Craigslist. Free chickens on Craigslist. So you're going to have it, rabbits and chicks as well. It's Easter. Just like with heat lamps, you're not going to stop people from using them because they're $10. You just try to educate folks on the do's and the don'ts and the whys nots and all that kind of stuff. So just be aware of that. So Just it is a season. I wanted to share that with you because it is Easter season. Wash your hands. Simple solution. So, okay, also coming up this week, very important. This is the last week to enter the Brentsea.com Chicken Coop Contest for March. This is the last week. In fact, the last second you can enter is this Thursday, March 28th, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is it. So you basically have one, two, three, four more days to enter. That's it. Call your friends. Call your family. Have them enter. One entry per household, please. Lower 48 states only. Double entries will be disqualified and deleted. Let me tell you how to enter. Great contest. $800 chicken coop and run. Comes with the coop and the run. $800 value plus shipping to your front door from my good friends over at Brentsea.com. It's the larger of their two coops. $800 value. Let me tell you how to enter. Send me an email. Very simple. Okay? Contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay? Contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay? Put coop contest in the subject line, please. Coop contest in the subject line. And then in the email itself, ladies and gentlemen, please put your name, shipping address, and phone number. Just need those three things. Name, shipping address, and phone number. And then send it to me. Contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay, one entry per household, which means if you and your husband and 19 kids live in the same house, that is one entry. But if you have 19 cousins all over the country, then they can enter for you, put their name down and all that kind of good stuff, and then they can have me ship the coop to you, I guess. There you go. So you have just until this Thursday, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to enter. We are giving away that coop this Friday. Okay, this Friday. And we've got I kind of agree, poet. This Friday, the 29th, that's Good Friday, and we'll have a short, brief, and sweet radio show, and we'll mainly be giving away the chicken coop from Brentsea.com. We may even invite Brentsea to come on the radio show, tell us about their great coops, and then give that coop away. We will call the winner live this Friday, but you do not have to be listening live to win. I know it's Good Friday. You'll be traveling. Maybe you can listen via the telephone or internet if you have the Wi-Fi hotspot while you're on. But, hey, I'm going to call you. If you're the winner, I am going to call you live on the show. You do not have to be listening live to win. I'll get in touch with you later that weekend or the next week. That's not a problem. You're going to win anyway. I'll contact you by email and phone and Facebook and every other way I can. But you don't have to listen live. But we are going to try to call the winner live this Friday. So we've got that going on. And finally, before we start our special guest segment today with Peter Brown, over the weekend, I've been wanting to do this for a long time, folks, and it got really an overwhelming response, very positive response, and a lot of people are participating. Okay, we are a nation of fat people. We know that. I've battled that my entire life since probably second grade. I was thin as a string bean growing up until I probably hit second grade. But a string bean. I mean, my mom had to give me medicine to actually eat, apparently, when I was little. String bean. Look at my pictures. And then about second grade, it's just, I wouldn't say been a battle, but it's been, hey, a big bone, whatever the case, whatever you want to call it, chunky. So a few years back, I lost 60 pounds. Yeah, buddy, 60 pounds, and it was great. And no diet. I hate the word diet. I don't like diet. What I did was I eliminated fried food from my diet initially, and then I just reduced my portions. That was pretty much it. Even back when I lost the 60 pounds, there wasn't any extra exercise involved. It was just basically diet that got those 60 pounds off. Eliminated fried food initially, and then smaller portions. Once the bulk of the weight came off, I put fried food back on the menu, but once a week. So it was once a week red meat and once a week fried food, and everything was on the menu. It didn't matter. You know, if it was a dessert, I shared the dessert with Jen, so we split it in half. Or fried food once a week, whatever the case may be. 60 pounds. And then I put about 20 of it back on over the last 4 or 5 years. Just 20, so that was pretty cool. And And then let's see. The so I need to get those off. And so I'm kind of doing the same thing, but I'm not eliminating anything. I'm just doing smaller portions and a little bit. My issue is snacking. I don't eat huge meals. I never have, never will. Jen out-eats me breakfast, lunch, and dinner. She eats so much more than me breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but I am a snacker. So it's a matter of just basically not eliminating anything. Ooh, there's a hawk. You better not come around here. I'm looking right out the back window over the homestead, the farm, the chicken coops. Man, he is just riding the wind. It's windy out there, and I think he's just having fun. Man, that is a beautiful sight. Got the American flag waving down in the garden, the chicken coops, the little barn, the tractor, and a beautiful hawk that is just riding the current. It's gorgeous. It's good to be alive today. Let me tell you, that is a beautiful sight. As long as you stay away from my chicken. So, anyway, I started this thing yesterday, Saturday, called the Fitness Flock, and a young lady came up with that name, and she won a copy of my book and a Chicken Whisperer T-shirt and bumper sticker when y'all voted on it at my Facebook page. It had a lot of creative names, and so it's called the Fitness Flock, and no dieting, no. It just encourages people. It helps people. I would not have lasted probably this long because I have to stop. I have to think about what I'm going to cook. In fact, Jen was like, oh, my gosh, the meals you fixed the last 4 days. Are incredible for us. But and then I take a picture of it and post it on my Facebook page, and I'm like, Fitness Flock update. Okay, what? And I post and maybe have a picture of what I consume for that meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then others respond what they had. And if you have, so we took a picture of it. I have a little file on it: breakfast day one, breakfast day two, breakfast day three, that type of thing, keeping track. And then, but it's just to encourage others to do the same. But if you have a recipe, maybe somebody says, "Oh, I had like last night. I did fish tacos. We had fish tacos with a little slaw, a little corn, a little tomato." Let's see what else. What else? Anyway, so someone's like, oh, that's so great. So you just, hey, that's a great recipe. I didn't get it out of any book. I just kind of, oh, let's throw this together. But you may see a recipe. Someone may post below because I say, hey, what did you have for lunch today, Fitness Flock members? And then all these people post what they had for lunch today, and you can see it. And you may see some, oh, I'd love the recipe for that. You can share the recipe. Maybe it's a recipe for, whatever it may be, your cornbread or your biscuits, or maybe a special salad that you put together, a taco salad, or maybe it's a chicken dish. And so you can share the recipe or contact them directly through Facebook and get the recipe. But the Fitness Flock is alive and well, and hopefully it'll continue. But it's no diet. It's lifestyle change or just whatever. You know, some people post, hey, what'd you have for supper? I said, I went to Ruby Tuesday's and had a beautiful steak and potato. That's awesome. What did you have for breakfast? Oh, I had bacon and sausage and eggs and a big glass of orange juice, or I had oatmeal and some blueberries. So everybody's posting, and then some great interaction, and maybe you can get even some recipes out of the deal. But it's encouraging for us to support each other as we do this. So no diet. Just a fun way for us to enjoy each other's company. Again, out there in the web world and Facebook, the Fitness Flock. How cool how cool is that? So that's fun. We hope you can join it on our Facebook page when we talk about that and we do the updates for the Fitness Flock. All righty, it is now time to we're going to head over to the phone lines. And we've got let's see what we've got here. It is time for our special guest segment. Special guest segment, and today's special guest segment is, of course, brought to you by Nutrina. Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for Super Chicken. You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
All right, it is now time to go over to the phone lines and bring on our good friend and pal, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. Find them online at firststatevetsupply.com. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I got your latest email. Sounds like you're fuming, and I can agree with you that. I know it can be very frustrating when, I guess, you've got the knowledge you have and you see the bogus stuff that's sometimes posted out there. But we got a big show for everybody. I know that our topic today is going to be kind of supplements, you know, vitamins, minerals, electrolytes, probiotics, all this amino acids, things you can add in your chicken's water when Should I not, should I do, when, and how, and all that kind of great stuff.
Yep.
But there was some other things you wanted to add, so I guess we'll kind of touch on those first and then get into our subject matter a little bit later and run through the end of the show with that. So whatever you want to start off with is perfectly fine with us. And so if you want to start off with our what we call our blogbusters segment or what have you, that's fine. Or, but it's completely up to you. I'm turning it over to you, my friend.
All right. Well, there was a on Facebook, there were a couple of different threads on there that were discussing the ins and outs, trials and tribulations of vaccinating for Marek's and so on. And for the most part, the information being put out there was pretty decent and good. And I chimed in a little bit. I generally do not. I try to stay off of the boards because, you know, of getting into a situation where, you know, one-upmanship and that kind of stuff. And I'm not into that. I into purely the research, the rhyme and reason, the facts as best as can be determined by people that are more expert at these things than I am. You know, and my history with these people goes back a long time. A lot of these folks befriended me when I was in the commercialized part of the business. We went to seminars together. You know, as I get out on my own, I stopped going to some of the seminars and stuff. Even the one that's in my own backyard, every year they have one out here in Ocean City, and they've come from all over the world to go to the meeting out here. It's usually around in sometime in October, and I just didn't feel it was necessary for me to continue to go on to those meetings. But a lot of these folks, you know, these are guys that do the research. Most of them. You know, I know them by name. They may not all remember me at this point in time by name, Chris, quite a few years, but it doesn't matter one way or another. The information that I gleaned, the notes that I took during those conversations with these people, when you get an opportunity to talk to people like this, you know, for somebody like me, you know, notebook in hand, as they talk, you write, and you ask a question while they're giving a talk. Generally, there's a handout that goes with it, and I've got tons of those you know, all over the place. So I don't dream up the things that I espouse, I believe in, and I know them to be fact in the scientific community, and I just try to put them out there for the folks to look. The more informed you are about anything, I don't care whether it's a governmental thing, politics, whatever you want to talk about, the more you know, the better off you are, and the more accurate your information is, the more credible you are. And that's where I take my stand. So there were some things posted on different places, and I did openly respond to them, and I just wanted to talk about Marek's from the standpoint of what it is. And I know we've been over this time in, time out. We did this, what, 3-4 weeks ago. We went all through it. But, you know, a lot of these folks evidently either don't know about this. I invited several people to listen in, told them the show would be archived and everything. So I did commit myself to explain a couple of things, and I will do so. But this disease, Marek's, what people really need to know is that it's what we call one of the most prolific diseases out there for poultry. I don't know of a place in the world at this point that raises poultry that doesn't use one of the vaccines in any way, shape, or form. You know, there are several different ones, and I want to dispel some of the rumors, the innuendo, the nonsense, and everything else, so that folks can understand it. One of the things is that the vaccine that is available to the general public, the herpes turkey virus that we're using presently in backyard flocks, and I don't know what some of the commercial hatcheries are using. And when I say commercial, I don't mean the Purdue's of the world and those folks. I know what they're using, but I don't know what some of the other folks that are and I don't want to mention names because it's not necessary, but we all know who they are, but I don't know what kind of vaccine they actually use as far as Amerix is concerned when they do vaccinate birds, okay? But that being said, all of these vaccines are not created equal. First off, the vaccine that is available to the backyard enthusiast and so on was never intended for you in the first place, okay? And you might say, why not? Well, back in the day, nobody vaccinated. The birds just died. And even the commercial poultry industry, that's what brought about the advent of the vaccines, the research and dollars that went into it back in the 60s and earlier, because flocks were dying in huge numbers. It was not uncommon at that time in the 60s and early 70s before the advent of the vaccine to have mortality as high as 70-80%. And those kinds of losses just could not be sustained, so something had to be done about it.
Let me ask you this, Doc. I'm sorry to do
that. No, jump right in.
I had posted a link. I was talking to one of my good friends here. People who follow on Facebook and the show know one of my good farm hands, Philip. And he does, you know, odd jobs for everybody really in the county. But one of the commercial poultry farms down the road, probably about 3 to 4 miles from here.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, hey, so-and-so's getting his baby chicks today. And he again, one of the big namers.
Mm-hmm.
He's got about four houses. And so I had mine at the time. I was just getting a couple of weeks of some additional baby chicks, both broilers and some layers. And, I'm out there pretty much every day for the first 2 or 3 weeks checking for pasty butt. And I'm like, hey, Philip, I mean, how many chickens did so-and-so get up the road today or, Friday? He said, I think probably about 100,000. He's got, I think, maybe 100,000. And he was there basically getting the baby chicks and then basically, for a lack of practical term, dumping them in the houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, how do you deal with pasty butt with 100,000 chicks? He says, I go in every day and pick up the dead ones. So that's his job every day. He goes to a lot of people around here. It's like, hey, where's Fanny? Oh, she's down at the so-and-so houses picking up dead chickens. And so he would go through and just so there's not – I said, you just so pasty. But again, you think about the labor cost, and everybody wants a 99-cent McNugget meal.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, I mean, they just – pasty butt, they just die. I pick the dead ones up every
mm-hmm.
– I put that on Facebook. So you're talking about back in the day – the number of deaths from not vaccinating for this, that, or the other. But
mm-hmm.
even still today, they I guess the numbers are so high, they can, like any other, and even though we're talking about, yes, a living chick, folks, the product, they have that factored in. So many losses from pasty butt, for example, in the end run, because they don't. You being formally in that type of field, do you find that across the board a good statement, or is it just something? Maybe this is an isolated case. When I asked him, how do you deal with pasty butt with 100,000 chicks, and he says, I pick dead ones up every day.
Yeah, and they will. I mean, it's what's called expected mortality. They expect, if they put 100,000 chicks in a commercial poultry house, they don't expect that when those birds reach maturity, whether it be 5, 6, 7 weeks of age or whatever age they're growing, because they grow them all different sizes for different markets. Somebody might want a smaller bird because of the overall cost or the way it fits into the type of food structure that they're putting out, keep costs down, get a bird that's smaller, weighs less, all the parts are smaller, and that kind of thing, but you can also sell it at a more reasonable price. So, but it is factored in, So they don't expect to get 100,000 birds out when the birds reach their growing potential. But if it exceeds a reasonable amount, then they will step in and they will come in and they'll medicate, do whatever they have to do. You have to keep in mind that they don't want any problems either, but it's mm-hmm. it's inevitable. You can't get away from it. I was listening to your intro, you know, about you know, baby chicks and ducks and this and that with Easter coming and everything mm-hmm. else. You can't stop it.
Yeah.
You just can't. And the only thing you can try to do, even in my end, you know, I've been doing this for a long, long time and trying to, my goal is to educate people. My goal is not to argue with people. If you want to argue, take it somewhere else. This mm-hmm. is not the arena to do that. And if you think you know more than I do, I'm happy. I'm happy for you. Okay? Because, you know, and if you insist on learning the wrong information, I'm equally as happy for you. Okay? I'm not into the argument part of it. That's not my goal. My goal is to give people good, clean, solid information that they can go and work with and mitigate the problems that they have come across, whether it be by accident or by design. And so the commercial poultry industry, they don't want it either. Dead birds don't pay bills. You've heard me say that time in, time out. And it does not matter whether mm-hmm. they are in your backyard or are they in a house with 100,000 other chickens. Mm-hmm. A dead chicken doesn't pay a bill unless it's being harvested to be put on the table. That's a different story. But by and large, you're right. They look at it that way. There is nobody going to go through and pull all the little white plumps off of butts. It's not going to happen.
Right.
They will go and look at how that came about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're not stupid people. These are very learned people and very sharp. Some of the best minds in the world when it comes to poultry and other things. So these guys are not jackasses. This is a business, and you know, it has to be looked at that way. And I understand that. I may not agree with everything that's done and so on, but I will tell you this. I had a conversation just the other day with the vet here that runs the local poultry lab that I deal with here.
Mm-hmm.
And he did tell me that, you know, one of the big poultry producers, they are moving away as quickly as feasible from antibiotics. And you've heard me mm-hmm, say this mm-hmm. before,
yeah.
that it is going to happen. It's just a matter of time.
And is it a case of, well, is that a case, Doc, of we're going away from just massively giving it just for the heck of it, but they'll still treat with it as needed, like it, I guess it should be.
Yeah, you will see that, but they're going to, once they find something that they're happy with, more on the natural side, because that's where the market is going to be. The
oil of oregano?
Yep. I have to say that the oil of oregano that I have on the website, and look, I don't care one way or another. They want to buy it. It's there. The directions come with it, the whole bit. Mm-hmm. But the point of the matter is we have been tremendously successful with this product. And I just had another one of my club members here. We just had our show. I was away all weekend up in Harrington here, but not too far away. And we had 1,200 birds there this weekend, and a tremendous show. A whole lot of people that I know, met, you know, whatever, come in there. But one of the club members had a bird that he wanted to breed from, but had severe diarrhea. And he had gone through the neomycin, bestrophen, this, that, and the other thing, and called me up and said, you know, look, you know, I'm not getting anywhere with this. If I can't get anywhere with him, I'm going to wring his neck. And I said, well, I said, I'll give you a bottle of this oil of oregano. I said, last stand. I said, you know, follow the directions on the bottle, give it every day. And in 4 days, it was gone. And so it just, you have to have the right stuff. You can't go in your cabinet and get out your oregano and beat it till it has some oil coming out of it and put it in the water and expect it to do anything. It's not the same. There are particular types of oregano that have a product called Cravacol in them that is the active ingredient. That's what makes it work, okay? And not only that, we also know that a lot of these herbs and stuff, they don't work well when they're not potentiated with something else to make it absorb. They do not absorb well through the intestinal wall, and whether it be human or otherwise, and that's one of the rubs for them. Some people might have a more sensitive gut when they take something. It doesn't have to be potentiated, but the majority of people, the majority of animals we have found, and I say we, not me, the people that research this stuff, I just read their stuff, okay, that when it's potential, and it's another herb, basically, it's the black peppercorn, an extract of the black peppercorn, and it makes all the difference in the world. So this particular product's got what we call piperine in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an extract of it. The one that is patented by an outfit out of New Jersey is called Bioperine, but technically the same thing. But they work very, very well. But, no, we've been successful with that. And, you know, he's happy. He's got a bird he can breathe tonight. I didn't have to wring its neck. It makes me feel good at the end of the day. I mean, hey, I that's a high for me. That's a, other people get high on dope. That's my dope right there. I get high on the fact that, you know, we were able to fix something there. We were able to help somebody and get them past, and they didn't have to use an antibiotic. So, yes, they are moving away from it. It'll be a slower move, but they also realize that people don't want it. And there's more money in it at the end of the day. They'll charge you more money. It'll cost you more money because mortality may be higher. But, you know, yeah, it's coming, all of that kind of stuff. But I want to get back to this Marix thing because it is important. It is important for people to understand, you know, that the vaccine that is available, technically, not even technically, everybody who sells the Marix vaccine, as you know it, once we break it out into single bottles and sell it to you, it's a violation of the law. I bet most of you didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not designed to be sold. That's why I went back and I said to you in the beginning of this conversation when we started talking about Marix, it has never been intended to be sold to the backyard community. And the reason for that, again, most people back in the day didn't vaccinate, and this was something that was going into the commercial poultry industry and so on. Today, it's done all the time. And one of the reasons for it is it comes in a 10-pack to us. There's 10 bottles, and it only comes with one set of directions. So it's not meant for individual vial use. The people that use this stuff day in and day out, they don't have to read the directions. They know them by heart. They know how it works. They know what they're supposed to do. And that kind of thing. So that's one of the reasons why you see it the way it is. Now, the other thing that is out here being kicked around, pillar to post, 9,000 times, and I'm just sick of it, is the fact that, you know, Susie Q vaccinated her birds, and now she's got Marix. Well, I will tell you that it didn't come from the vaccine. It's impossible. Cannot happen. And the reason for that is this is not, capital letters, N-O-T, it is not an actual Marix virus. And that's just the truth of the matter. And I directed some people last night on Facebook to put out the research paper that says so. And, you know, they don't even have to buy the paper. All they got to do is go and read the abstract, and it'll tell them that. And then it came up as to, well, it doesn't say that on the directions. Well, it doesn't have to tell you exactly mm-hmm. every little thing that you need to, because you don't need to know, you see, because it's not made for you. So you get into these things of, you know, of kicking it around from pillar to post and everything else, and all you do is create an argument, and that's not my design. You know that as long as I've been doing the show. I've said it, and I don't mean to offend anybody. And like I said, if you think you know more than I do, you are. You want to go on, go ahead with it. Run with it. I'm happy.
Please don't worry about offending anybody. Me and Pat many times have said this is an equal opportunity offender.
You know, and everybody that knows me knows how I operate. And if people don't want to vaccinate, that is their choice. And I am not trying to twist their arm. That's not what this conversation is about. Okay? The conversation here is, if I choose to vaccinate, what will be the ramifications of me doing this particular vaccination? And I will say here to you, the ramifications of doing this are none that I am aware of. For instance, you will give a shot to the bird, and you will see no reaction in the bird. They won't sneeze, they won't cough, they won't choke, and if you've done it properly and put it in the right place, they won't die either. Not even close. So there isn't any downside side to it, okay? If the vaccine has been given before the bird was exposed to a field strain of the virus, okay, they should be protected from that field strain. Herein comes the biggest rub in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The vaccine will not prevent the bird from mm-hmm. being exposed after vaccination and possibly then carrying the original field strain around. That's a possibility, and that's life. That's the way it goes. Mm-hmm. So you need to weigh what you do. If there is a downside, that might be it. But anybody that's seen a bird who has been crippled with this disease knows that you wouldn't want that for anybody. You wouldn't
right.
want it for yourself. You wouldn't want it for the bird. So from my perspective, and I don't care where you buy it. I don't care. That's not the, that's not an issue here. I sell it. Yes, I do. Got plenty of it. Always have. That's not the issue. The issue is if you decide to do it, I don't care where you buy it. Buy it from a facility that is going to give you a product that you can use when you get it. That means you have to have the diluent that goes with it. You have to have the vaccine itself. You have to have the proper needle and syringe. And you have to have proper directions. And all of this is extremely important because if you don't do it right, there's no point in doing it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And, you know, there's a lot of that out there. Now, I very rarely read anything on this show at all. It's all from my memory, but some things you just can't keep in your head. But I want to read just a little bit thing here, as we talked about as well on Facebook, you know, about people who want to cut the vaccine. The vaccine was never meant to be cut, okay, by anybody. Now, the truth of the matter is the commercial poultry industry does it all day long, okay? And the reason they do that is because they can. Their birds live a short life. They are only trying to protect that bird for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, usually not much more than that as far as the and we're talking about broilers here. When you go to the commercial laying operations, they usually give full dose. At least they did when I was in that side of the business, okay? So you're looking at taking a vaccine, and I have seen commercial companies cut it 10 to 1, okay? And one of the reasons they're able to do that is that they can cajole, coerce, beat over the head, do whatever you want to call it, the commercial vaccine companies into producing a vaccine that has a higher PFU count. That's a plaque-forming unit. Basically, what you're looking about is how much actual virus is in the bottle, okay? And the more plaque-forming units they have, the more they can cut it because it's like getting bottles of vaccine free. When I left that industry, we were producing vaccine, and they were buying vaccine that was in excess of 10,000 PFUs per 1,000 doses of vaccine. So if you were to cut it, you would certainly be getting a very high PFU dose per bird, okay? And that's where it's at. So I just wanted to read a statement here, and this is from, I believe it's Diseases of Poultry. This is a paper, I'm sorry, it's Avian Diseases, 2011, June. I think it's volume 55, page 263 to 272. And it's called Effect of Diluting Marek's Disease Vaccines on the Outcomes of Marek's Disease Virus Infection when Challenged with Highly Virulent Marek's Disease Viruses. Okay? And basically, what they're saying here at the end of the day is that the detrimental effect of vaccination dilution was more evident in females than in males and was more evident when it was challenged with a particular type of challenged virus, okay? So what they're telling you is that by cutting the vaccine, you're not helping things, okay? And I don't want to stand here and read this whole stupid thing, but that's the gist of what they're saying in this particular publication. And it's recent information, this is an indication of people. Here's the problem. You buy a vaccine, you don't mix it all and dilute it. See, the commercial poultry industry mixes it all and dilutes it. So their PFU count per cc, if you would like, will be uniform. You're going to take a vaccine, and you're going to take a small amount of diluent from the diluent bottle, and then you're going to try as best you can to cut a small little thin wafer that flakes up very easily, and in many cases, when you get it, it's already broken, okay, which doesn't hurt it, just makes it tougher for you to divide it up into quarters. I mean, I know people that take this stuff cut it up into eighths, for crying out loud. I mean, you know, that's crazy. I look at it this way. If your chicken isn't worth $2 to you, why do you own them? You know, I mean, if it's just crazy from my perspective to see this done in this particular fashion. That being said, I'm not a fan of cutting these vaccines. I'm not a fan of diluting it at the level that we play in, the backyard enthusiast and so on. That being said, folks do it. I would rather have you do it and do it properly. I would invite people to send me an email, and I will send them the directions that I have formulated free of charge to do so. And we will tell you what to use, how to use it, and so on. And if you follow those things, you'll probably get a decent amount of vaccine. And the other thing is that once you start messing with the diluent bottle, you also run into contamination problems. I had that particular problem with a client over the weekend. Wanted to come and buy some more diluent, and we don't get extra diluent. If you've got any extra, it came from a case that was broken, and you were able to salvage a couple of bottles out of it, and the company replaced them all. But that's generally the only way that you're going to get it. It's not sold separately, nor is it legal at the company level where it's manufactured to sell it individually. Okay. So I'd be more than willing to those who send me an email to send them back a Word document that has the information in it, and they can do what they see fit about it and follow that protocol if they like, or if they don't want to do that, that's okay. One more statement from this Merrick's paper here that I told you about, Avian Diseases, 2011, June, volume 55, page 263, 272, okay. It says here, it says, our results showed that dilution of the MD vaccines can lead to reduced MD protection, reduced relative body weights, reduced vaccine DNA during the first 3 weeks, and increased Merrick's disease virus DNA load. And that's how they judge infection rates as well. So it might be a lot of gobbledygook for some people, but those two statements alone should deter you from wanting to do this anyway. But if a person wants to do it, far be it for me to, you know, poo-poo it. If that's what you want to do, go ahead and do it. So, right. You know, it's just one of those things that and here's another thing. This is another one from Australian Veterinary Journal, 2007, and I just wanted to put this out there for those that don't realize that this is a turkey herpes virus vaccine. This was the objective here was to examine the effects of varying the doses of turkey herpes virus vaccine and Merrick's disease virus challenge. So in other words, how much HVT do you give? We're talking about here PFUs, what I was talking about before, plaque-forming units. One of the reasons I've never discussed this stuff like this in detail, it is a lot of gobbledygook. If you don't understand it, okay, it's like chewing dried oatmeal. You know, it's at the end of the day, who cares what a PFU is? If you're doing things right, you don't have to worry about it. If you're wanting to cut it, then you're looking at it a little bit different. And I can't tell you, and the vaccine company is probably not going to share with me, you know, how many PFUs they're putting in the vaccines. I can tell you that they're probably putting in the bare minimum because that's how you make money. It doesn't matter whether it's most people don't realize that when you go to the store and you buy something that's supposed to have 10 ounces in it, by law, in most states, it doesn't necessarily have to have 10 ounces in it. It can have 9 7/8. It can have 9 3/4. Usually there's a margin of leeway that they give you. So I'll tell you what, they set some of these things real tight because, you know, if I'm making 1 million bottles and I can save 2/10 of a cc over 1 million bottles, I've saved some money. If I can save an ounce over half an ounce, 3/4 of an ounce. So all of these things, play into this thing. But this is something that and it doesn't take a lot of this. I'll read one more statement from this last one. This was the effects of the vaccine dose, virus challenge dose, and see, it's a huge title, an interval from vaccination to challenge on the protection of broiler chicks against Merrick's disease virus challenge. And as much as 200 PFUs of the actual Merrick's virus had significantly higher mortality and MC incidence than those with 50 PFUs. So it's all about how much you give them, how well you do it, and all of those things that enter into how it's going to turn out at the end of the day. And I just wanted to share this part of it with everybody. The other thing, there was somebody on there asked about vaccination, the technique and how you do it. It's actually quite simple. The vaccine comes as a two-part vaccine, a large bottle of what people think is just water. It's orangey-colored diluent. It's a very growth-rich media to keep the vaccine alive once you reconstitute the wafer into the diluent. So for the moment, we're going to talk about mixing it like it's supposed to be from the manufacturer, and that is one bottle of diluent to one bottle of vaccine. You will take the rubber, you'll take the metal seal off of both bottles, and you won't want to do this until you are ready to vaccinate, okay? Because once you take the two and reconstitute everything into one bottle, you've got 1 hour to use it, okay? It doesn't mean after 1 hour everything in the bottle dies off and it's completely dead. That means that a good portion of the PFUs in that bottle, the plaque-forming units, the virus itself, will have expired, and you will not be giving the proper dose or PFUs per bird after that period of time. I don't make the rules. This is the research that these companies have done on these. It's a very fragile vaccine, and again, that goes back to how it's shipped. We have a very strict guideline here on how we pack this particular product. Some of the folks out there that sell these products do not. And so where you buy it and how cheap you buy it isn't always what you get at the end of the day, because there's no sense in paying half price for something down the road, but when you get it home, you can't eat it. Same thing here. You know, not having it shipped properly and having it shipped somewhat temperature controlled, then there may not be any point in using it at the end of the day, because it's just a waste of time. So, but anyway, you're going to take the rubber stoppers out of both bottles. You're going to take the large diluent bottle, and you're going to dump some of that diluent into the small bottle with the vaccine wafer in it. You're going to put the lid back on that. It's a little rubber stopper. And you're going to just gently shake that up, and almost immediately that wafer will go into solution. You're going to take that little bottle and dump it into the big bottle, okay? You're going to put the stopper back. Well, first you're going to take the big bottle, and you're going to wash that little bottle out three times into the big bottle. So you're going to back and forth, just a slow motion. You don't want to shake it because it foams, okay? So you're just going to rinse that little bottle out. When you're all done with your three rinses, everything ends up in the big bottle. You can then put the stopper back in the big bottle, and then just gently roll it back and forth in your hand, side to side, two, three, four times maximum. You don't need to do any more than that. Your vaccine is now ready to go. I suggest, whether it be wintertime or whether it be summertime, that you take a cup with some ice in it, some crushed ice, and put your bottle of vaccine in there, and then you draw what you need from that. The vaccination dose is tenths of a cc. So just for argument's sake, you could do with one cc, you could do five birds. Okay? A lot of people don't understand, you know, two-tenths of a cc. It would be basically on an average syringe, it would be two lines up from the bottom. Okay? After you get to this position here, it's a subcutaneous injection, very simple, very easy to do, not complicated. If you're trying to do an older bird, you'll probably need somebody to hold them to keep from flopping around and injuring you and themselves and making a mess out of everything. But you're going to pull some skin away from the bird's neck. On older birds, I like to go about a third of the way down the neck. You're going to vaccinate going away from the head. You're going to come in over top of the bird's head with the needle and syringe, roughly on a 45-degree angle. You are going to be pulling the skin away from the neck, and then you're just going to go under the skin. About a quarter of an inch is all you need, no more than 3/8 of an inch, and you're going to deposit the vaccine there. And as quick as you can pick them up and put them down doing that, that's how easy it is. It's no harder than that. Now, baby chicks, maybe a little bit easier. They were for me. I know when I used to do them by hand, I used to pick them up by the scruff of the neck, and just let them kind of dingle-dangle a little bit, come in over top of their head with the vaccine and the syringe, and go no more than a quarter of an inch under the skin, deposit the vaccine, and you're done. It's really, really simple. And I encourage anybody that hasn't done it, that wants to do it, to get a syringe and practice. Practice. Just go over the top. You don't have to actually inject it, but you can get the technique down. You can get the angle down. And the reason you want to go on to 45, if you go too shallow, in other words, too parallel to the bird's neck, then you can get the vaccine, what we call intradermally, and you don't get the effect of the vaccine that you want. Intradermally means between two layers of skin. Okay? So it's real, real simple. You should not be in any muscle. You should not be in any tissue by pulling the skin away from the neck. Very, very simple to do, very quick. And again, keeping in mind, you know, you want to don't want to be, oh, I'm in the middle of vaccinating, I got to walk the dog, I got to change a diaper, my cell phone's ringing. Those things should all be put aside and taken care of before you have to do any of these kinds of things. And
Yeah. You tell Lily that. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Lily. I'm sorry, Caleb. I have to go vaccinate my flock. Sorry that you're stinky right now, but I'm sure. Hey, please forward all complaints to Chicken Doctor at.
So basically, that's how this this vaccination technique is done. It's quite simple. It should be very quick. And there shouldn't be any mortality. There shouldn't be any morbidity. Morbidity means birds sitting around, standing around, and this and that and the other thing. I would not worry about whether or not you might hit a vein or anything in the neck. Chances are you won't. Nobody in the commercial industry looks for it. They just vaccinate, and it's real simple. There's no disinfection needed. It's a quick in and out. Doing it by hand with a needle. It's a 25 gauge, 5/8 needle. With a 1 cc syringe, I would change that needle or the syringe every 10 birds. That way it keeps the needle nice and sharp, and it makes a clean, small hole going in, because sometimes the end of the needle gets a little tiny bend in it, or a downward bend on the point, and you can't see it, but every time you go into the bird, it comes out and it pulls out, and you start getting a little bleeding and that kind of stuff. So to avoid all of that, no more than 10 birds per syringe, and then go on for another one. We sell them for 35 cents a piece. It's not that big a deal. If you want to look at it from that standpoint. But it's really simple. None of this is rocket science. It's all been figured out for you. And all I'm trying to do here is help dispel the rumors. This is a turkey herpes virus vaccine called HVT. It is not a Marex vaccine. It is named a Marex vaccine because of what it does, okay? But it is not a live Marex vaccine. It is a live vaccine, but it is not a live Marex vaccine. Now, you heard me earlier talk about, I don't know what some of the hatcheries use. If they're using some of the newer vaccines, they could be using an HVT with an actual Marex virus now, because the commercial poultry industry on the broiler side has moved on to those things because they cannot get the protection from the HVT. Now, I'll also say something else to you. The vaccine that you use, this HVT vaccine, you will see in the directions, you'll see that the abbreviation CFL. That doesn't mean Central Football League, okay?
Oh, man.
Yep, it doesn't. It's not going to help anybody out for a Central Football League. What that means, it's a cell-free, lyophilized vaccine. Lyophilized meaning freeze-dried, okay? That's what it is. And what it means by cell-free is that this is free of the whole cell. And one of the reasons why this vaccine doesn't work as well as what the commercial people use, even in an HVT, which is a herpes virus again, is because of this fact. If the breeding stock has been recently vaccinated with a HVT vaccine, there could be enough circulating antibodies in there to significantly reduce the effect of the vaccination that you're given because of the circulating antibodies. Okay, so you have the circulating antibodies in the chick that are passed on from the dam, and then you vaccinate, and you don't get a good enough vaccination because the antibodies are negating some of the vaccine because it is a cell-free. If you were to have the vaccine that the commercial poultry industry is using as an HVT, theirs would say C-A-L, cell-associated lyophilized, okay? Two different animals, all HVTs, all herpes virus of turkey, but two different animals. The whole cell will then protect the birds from those circulating antibodies from the dam that were being passed on and allow these birds to build a better, what we call a viremia, which is the building of antibodies in a bird, okay? And we will get a better take on those birds than we would if we didn't use it. So that's why they don't use this vaccine, okay? So they use a Rispin's 99, they use an SB1, all mixed in with their HVT, but they're all cell-associated, okay? They're not cell-free.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a big difference. And theirs are not lyophilized anymore. Theirs are all coming frozen in liquid nitrogen and generally not available to the general public unless they wanted to go to the expense of owning a liquid nitrogen container, then sending it to me by truck because you can't send it UPS. And then I would take it to the company. They would fill it with more nitrogen, fill it with the vaccine that you want. And I would bring it back to the trucking company and ship it back to you. It is available. I can get anything you want as far as the vaccines are concerned as a general rule. So, I mean, it's just not practical, certainly in the backyard setting. But those vaccines are definitely more effective. There isn't a question about it. But you would be then vaccinating with a vaccine that was a combo vaccine that did contain an actual Marek's disease virus vaccine, and that would be a different game changer, certainly for sure. The other thing is how it spread. There was a question up there on Facebook, and I just want to say that this is a very prolific vaccine virus, rather. Spreads very, very readily. Just loves to get in through the nostril, through the conjunctiva of the eye. Birds can breathe it in through the mouth, the nostrils, the whole bit. And it is that dander that you see when a bird is flapping its wings, and that cloud of little dust has a tendency to float around in the air. That's just loaded with it. Just loaded with it. And so when you see these things, you have to take caution. And I put that out there for them on Facebook today. And also, like I said, I invited several people to come on here and listen. They can call in. They can if they got a question or whatever. Because the more we know as a community, the better off we are. But the better the information we have, that makes all of us stronger. And that's what this is all about. And that's why I brought it up today. The other thing is, can you vaccinate older birds? The vaccine, while it has a day of age instruction with it, is because of the fact that that's how the vaccine was developed. The vaccine, again, was not developed for you in the backyard. It was developed for the commercial poultry industry. The best time for them to vaccinate is at one day of age. The best time to vaccinate a bird for this particular disease is at one day of age. But if it can't be done at one day of age, some vaccination is better than nothing. Okay? So older birds can be done. It's not age-dependent from a standpoint of will a vaccine work in an older bird versus a younger bird. That is of no consequence at all to my knowledge, and I've talked to quite a few people about this. You're much better off to vaccinate than non-vaccinate. Not to vaccinate. Here's another thing I would say. If you have a flock of birds, let's just for argument's sake, you have a backyard flock of 10 birds. You never go to poultry shows. You don't have other people around you where you go over and you swap chicken stories and sit at the kitchen table and the chicken runs around in your lap and you don't bring your chickens over there and everything else. Should you vaccinate? Vaccination is, in my estimation, should be done based on your exposure, your potential for problems. And I would look at whether you go to shows or not. If you're going to shows, you're going to have a problem down the road, more than likely, with Marek's at some point in time. a good portion of the folks that I deal with in my own home club here do vaccinate for Marex because they've had it before. And we're in an area where there's a lot of commercial poultry, and every bird here commercially is vaccinated. So it depends on your exposure. It depends on whether or not you go to shows. I believe there were some folks on the Facebook page as well who said that they had been to shows and contracted it there, they felt, and brought it home and had some problems and everything else. And those folks would be well advised to vaccinate, okay? And, even vaccinating. Like I said, if there were antibodies there, if the vaccine was not handled properly in shipping to you, if you didn't handle it properly after you got it, if you didn't pay attention to the directions and you mixed it up and you went shopping and you came back. I mean, I've had people tell me all the time, oh, yeah, I just save it, I freeze it, put it in the freezer, and when I need it again, I use it. Well, I can tell you right now, you're wasting your time, you know. And it's not just me saying that, you see, because some people say, well, yeah, he sells the stuff. Yeah, I've sold you. It doesn't matter. You know, the facts are the facts, and they're not facts that came out of my head and I dreamt up. These are facts that came out of the scientific community from the people who developed this vaccine. It is a very, very fragile vaccine compared to a lot of others, okay? You take a pox vaccine, you can kick pox down the road all day in a unrefrigerated container and get it where it's going, and it's still just as good as it was the day it left the factory. And as a matter of fact, back in the day before there was these shipping containers that you could really use that are effective like they are today, it was required for some vaccines to be shipped coast to coast and back unrefrigerated and still see if they could pass muster in the laboratory. So there are a lot of vaccines out there of different types that do different things. But this one is an extremely delicate one and one that needs to be done properly. Most vaccine failures are caused by improper handling of the vaccine, and whether this is at the commercial level, and yes, they do have problems too, where things weren't handled, got a new person that came in, didn't follow protocol, and things of that nature. They're now going and vaccinating in the egg, what we call in ovo, before mm-hmm. they're even hatched, which I think is mm-hmm. ridiculous, but that's the way it is. And there's some research around to show that this might not be the smartest thing in the world. The research down the road, we'll see. We'll have to see. They're looking at the fact, are the viruses for Marex, what we call the field strains, are they getting stronger because we're vaccinating? Is this what's causing it? I don't know. I can't say because I don't do that part of it at all. But there are some people looking at that. I can tell you that. I've read some recent research stuff on that. And that remains to be seen. You know, every organism wants to stay alive. That's what antibiotic resistance is all about. So if it was easy to kill them, you wouldn't have a problem with antibiotic resistance. So every organism wants to survive. One of the other things to take away from this conversation is that this is a tumor-forming virus. This would be equal to, but not contagious to humans in the fact that we would be looking at something along the lines of human cancer, okay? And this disease has generally been a disease that, most of the books you read will say, it's a disease of young birds. That was back in the day when birds didn't live as long as they do today. We've got a lot of backyard birds now where we didn't have them years ago. We had them, but we didn't have people that vaccinated. People didn't know why birds died. There weren't access to your extension agent like you have today. There weren't diagnostic laboratories like you have today. There just wasn't the Internet like you have today. All of these different things play into all of that. As far as those things are concerned. So, but it is also an immune system suppressive disease. It suppresses the immune system. Generally speaking, and I say generally because nothing is ever absolute when you really come right down to it, most birds do not die basically from Marex itself, okay? They become a starve out and pick out in the flock is one of the major ways that the birds will end up as tomorrow's mortality. But this immune suppression allows other things to take over, E. coli, Pseudomonas, all these other things, funguses, just in the same way that, a person would have AIDS unchecked, would start to develop problems with its immune system being able to fight off these things because it's an immune system problem. And we'll not go into it today. We've gone into it before, but we'll not do it today. There is another disease that birds get called Gumboro disease or infectious bursal disease, and that is technically the poultry people don't like to hear it say it's said this way, but technically it's the same thing as AIDS, not the same virus, because of the same thing. It destroys the immune system early on. But so when you know all of these things, you put it all together, you can sit down and you can decide whether or not you want to vaccinate, and that's strictly up to each individual, whatever circumstances, you know, they have. You know, cleaning up a lot is a good thing. Keeping a place fairly clean. Certainly, if you've had it, I would vaccinate, and then I would come back in and disinfect everything that was there in an attempt to keep the what we call the virus challenge down. You've heard me talk here when they talk about chickens challenged with so many PFUs of vaccine or field strain virus. You can have a good challenge of it in your own place, just in the dust and the dander that may never be cleaned up. Certain places, certain places are cleaner than others. So it doesn't mean you have to keep it squeaky clean, but all of that stuff. And again, I would never blow the dust down. I would wash it down. Okay, as you blow it down, it becomes airborne, and then it goes everywhere. And like I say, this virus, even the field virus, is very fragile to disinfection, oxine, or whatever you want to use. Bleach, whatever, should take care of it, from that standpoint. So, Andy, I don't know if you want to take a break. I think I can shut up for a minute.
We can take a break. That's fine. And then when we come back, we've got about, we can go 40 minutes. I know we wanted to, people are tuning in to hear about the additives and supplements and water.
Yeah, we can go right to that as soon as you want to come back. Yeah, no problem.
That sounds great. Alrighty, folks, we're talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply, and he thought it was very important today, and many of our listeners we heard in the chat room also think it was very important for him to share what he did today, since it was a current topic on a current forum or blog, and so he wanted to make some corrections there and get the right information out there. So no worries, Doc. Lots of people appreciated that in the chat room for sure, and when we come back after this short break, we will get with the topic today, talking about supplements and vitamins and minerals and electrolytes and amino acids and probiotics and all that in the water, the do's, the don'ts, and should we's and shouldn't we, all that when we return after this short break. Stay with us, folks.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Again, being Monday, we've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, as we wrap up the segment today with additives and supplements. Let's start off with really the most common that we had posted over on Facebook and kind of get those out of the way. People are always, when they say, oh, what do you add to your chicken water? Probably the first thing we always see is apple cider vinegar, and then the second may be electrolytes. And then you might have some that start talking about probiotics and other things. But if you I don't know where you were going with it, but if we can at least get those kind of out of the way first, because I feel the majority are asking about that apple cider vinegar, as specifically maybe with use of coccidiosis. But I've used it in the past, not for any specific health benefit. That never entered my mind. But in the summer times in the South, I added maybe a 1/8 cup to a 5-gallon water just to keep the green slime down. Was my only goal in using it, but apple cider vinegar and then electrolytes, maybe some probiotics, and then any others you'd like to mention, amino acids and things like that, Doc?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the whole thing is a big subject. All of it, you know, by the time you get into vitamins, and we can do that. We can, you know, carry it over to the next show as well.
We'll probably do that next Monday, sure.
Because it's a good subject. It's that time of year when folks are rearing chicks and everybody's gearing up. There's a lot of excitement around on the boards about, you know, getting the birds out and this and that and the other thing. And, you know, technically when you come right down to it, vitamins, electrolytes, for the most part, or any of these supplements, except for overuse, there isn't any real, you know, wrong or right or my way is better than yours or whatever. There are products that are better than others, yes. But apple cider vinegar, good old standby, basically works for the most part by acidifying the gut. When you change the pH of the gut, it makes it difficult for the bad guys to set up shop there. There has not been, to my knowledge, any great degree of what I would call credible research done. It's always been a thing. I put it in the water and it works. Some of the universities I know from talking to a few people, a couple of different ones over the years, have recommended it because it's used extensively in the commercial poultry industry. I'll bet you all didn't know that. They use it in a powdered form, and they put it in the birds' water. Sometimes they use it to tighten up the gut before the birds go to market, so they're not loaded with water because the poultry companies don't like to pay for water weight. And but it is a good product. I like the idea of it. I like people to use it. If they, you know, if that's what you got, that's fine. And I don't see any problem with it. I don't think that I would want to use apple cider vinegar and then at the same time put a probiotic in. I think you're probably working against yourself there and may even cause a problem from the standpoint. I don't know if, I'll be honest with you, I do not know if putting a probiotic in the drinking water with the apple cider vinegar, whether or not the probiotic would survive. My guess would be not because of the pH change. You have to look at apple cider vinegar being benign, so to speak, but the probiotic being a living organism, and you're changing the, you know, its pH before it even gets a chance to set up shop. So I don't think it would survive very well. So I wouldn't recommend, at least for myself, doing from my perspective, doing the two together. But apple cider vinegar by itself has been a tremendous product over the years, easy to get, inexpensive. And certainly could be used and is used as a first line of defense for intestinal problems. The problem that comes to mind with these things is that after there's a full-blown problem, most of these kinds of things don't work. It's too late. So, therefore, using a product on a regular basis, I wouldn't say you have to use it every day, but certainly every other day would be a real good regimen to be on with the apple cider vinegar, because you're going to change that pH, and a lot of these organisms cannot stand that acidic environment, and so they get the, it's like getting a pass through at NASCAR for speeding. You know, these guys get ingested and they get down into the gut, and they can't live there, so they pass right on out. So it's from that standpoint, it's a great thing, and it's natural. There's no side effects. There's no withdrawal times eating eggs. There's no withdrawal times eating the carcass of the bird. So from that standpoint, cheap, easy, effective, good product. I tell people all the time, what have you got? And if they don't have anything, and we've got a gut problem going on, you know, it certainly would help to put that in the drinking water and try to get things under control. Sometimes it doesn't work at all, again, when you got a full-blown problem, and that's just because the other bacteria have got themselves set up. You can't give them, you get too much apple cider vinegar in the water, they won't drink it, and you probably would need to move up to a real high level in order to get some efficacy from it at that point. But that being said, very good product. People should keep a little bit of it around. It's and if you're not a fan of using it on a regular basis, there are people who have flocks that don't give them anything, and I'm okay with that. If your flock is motoring along and they're producing, or they're looking good to you, they're in good feather, they're in good health, and all these other things, I don't necessarily see the point in using things that some people are, some people are against it. I've read some of the things that were posted in the question that you put out, Andy, and over the years I've read tons of them, pros, cons, and everywhere in between. But, it's really up to the individual as far as what you want to use. When you start getting into vitamins and electrolytes, so we'll deal with electrolytes first. It's a fairly easy subject to deal with. Basically, you're looking at sodium and potassium. That's the two main ingredients as far as electrolytes are concerned. And an overuse of them creates a problem with salt intake on birds. We've talked about it somewhat here before on the show. Too much salt can cause congestive heart failure. That's basically what it is. Or what other people might know as ascites. Other people that are older might remember it as something we called water belly. And what this is it causes a venous pressure differential in the venous system, and they start leaking fluid from the veins into the body cavity. The heart starts to malfunction, not pumping as much blood, therefore not oxygenating the blood with as much oxygen as needed, and this material starts to leak out of the veins and into the body cavity. Now, I've seen this with people who feed extra cat food, and I see this with people who have fed I had a client one time. They raised game chickens, and they had some guard dogs and ran in with the chickens, which is typical for them. And he had these automatic dog feeders. Well, the chickens just went over to him and just had a party. But they also had a bunch of chickens walking around, with their legs all spread out, walking upright like a duck, and so on. And he called me one time, and I told him. I said, "He said, well, you know, I got one here that just died." He said, "Well, you know, what's going on?" And after going through and asking the questions and investigating a little bit, I told him, "I should go outside, take the bird, cut it open." I said, "And see what's inside." I said, "It's probably loaded with water." He came back, and he got a pint of water out of the belly of that bird, or out of the body mm-hmm. cavity. And so that's what it can do, the over consumption of liquid, assault rather, which causes this leakage of liquid into the body cavity. So, you know, too much of something is not good, but, you know, there are times when these things are needed, and you know you need to look at those things and adjust your therapy, you know, as necessary. You know, we've done it here before on the show. We've had people call in egg production problems, and we
yep.
Looked at some of those things. We suggested some things be used. We had some other people call in with some feather abnormalities and stuff, and we sent some things out for those and got those straightened out. Bob Rosberry up in Massachusetts doing that great study that he did up there and with behavioral problems and stuff and more or less proving, you know, in a backyard type setting with a reasonable amount of birds that, you know, yeah, what they are able to consume, you know, depends how, what they're getting out of that food that they're consuming can lead to behavioral problems as well. So, you know, and some of the reasons we see some of that stuff, you know, I get people all the time, I say, well, I don't need a supplement because I feed my birds good feed. Nobody ever said you didn't. It is the ability of a bird and or animal to get what they need from the feed that they're eating, whether that's a disease problem or a genetic problem or a problem with the feed itself. You know, just because you go out here and you buy a rattle-trap car and you don't know any better, and you pay $5,000 for it when you could have got it for $500, doesn't make it any better, doesn't make it run any better. You know, you got taken for $4,500 additional is what you got taken for. That's the issue. So that feed problems abound all over the place, and it doesn't matter who makes the feed because it's like everything else. You know, you make enough of something, something is bound to go wrong. And I think that's one of the things that gets lost in the shuffle, you know, whether it's making a loaf of bread. You know, I don't know how many times I've seen that on Facebook, too. You know, I made my grandma's biscuits the other day, and you could use them as hockey pucks, you know, or whatever. And you know, come to find out, you know, one of the ingredients was either left out or wasn't there or wasn't as good as it should have been or whatever the case may be. So same thing goes here. And so deciding when you want to use a supplement is strictly up to an individual, and I would base that on the weather, stress, what kind of antibiotics you've used recently, and all of those kinds of things will play into whether or not you should use it. One of the times you certainly, in my estimation, would want to use the electrolytes is during the summertime, you know, when it's really hot and Hades out and birds are struggling to keep cool and everything else. They are exhausting their electrolytes very quickly. And so putting them back in the form of a powder added to the drinking water certainly is going to help the bird retain more water, and it's going to help them respirate better because they are going to use that water to lose heat. So that would be certainly, you know, one of the times when a person would want to definitely put some electrolytes in the water, and even vitamins, because during those hot months and that kind of thing, birds will back away from the feed. And I know it's not the time of the year to talk about it, but we can talk about it, you know, as the the hot weather comes, and it'll come on us all of a sudden. Well, this goofy weather we've all been having. I don't know about anybody else, but we got snow here today. It's not a mountain or anything, but it's been crazy. And what you use, when you use it, and how you use it. There are a lot of folks have different rituals that they have. It depends on whether you're showing birds, depending on whether you're free-ranging birds, depending on how much of the food that you provide for free-range birds are they actually consuming compared to what they're getting when they're out eating bugs or whatever they're eating during the day and don't come back to the coop to eat their regular food. We give them that regular feed that you get from the feed store and everything else. We get that, you know, for them because it's balanced. You know, it has everything that they'll need in it from a standpoint of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, fats, carbohydrates, protein, and everything else. And if they ate nothing but that, they should do just fine. So the fact that they're out running around and stuff, sometimes supplementation is called for, you know, when you're doing that. Now, in the case of coccidiosis, especially if you're using Ampryl or Corid as your agent to mitigate your problems with coccidiosis, you'll certainly want to keep away from using any vitamins at that point, especially thiamine, because the Ampryl and or Corid. Ampryl and Corid are the same thing. I'll just run through that real quick. They're both Amprolium. Corid's made for cattle. Mm-hmm. Ampryl's mm-hmm. made for chickens. It doesn't matter which one you use, okay? They're both the same. So whatever you can get your hands on, wherever you buy, whatever you like. I've heard people say, well, I like Corid over Ampryl. Well, that's fine. It's all in your head because it all comes from the same place, and it makes no difference whatsoever. So from that standpoint. But those products are what we call antagonists, and they tie up the thymine in the bird system. And the oocysts that are causing the coccidiosis need that thymine. They ingest the Ampryl. It's not there, and they die. And they've had a workaround. They work around pretty well in that situation. What I mean by that is the oocysts that cause the coccidiosis have figured out how to mm-hmm. get around the Ampryl, and we see Ampryl being less and less effective. And look, it's been out there for over 50 years. So it, you know, it's no surprise to me that you know, that this product is starting to, and has for quite some time, losing its punch. And on the flip side of that, then you start getting into using sulfa-type drugs, and those kinds of things will tie up vitamin K and that kind of stuff. So you might want to look at possibly doing something, with one of those products as far as a complete vitamin electrolyte compound is concerned. There's a product out there, I'm trying to think of the name of it, it comes in little packages, do it by the gallon. I think they call it, sheesh, I can't remember the name of it. It leads people to believe that some sort of magic stuff in the thing. It's just it's just a vitamin electric compound, electrolyte compound. It's not a, it's not any kind of real compound that's going to do anything other than help to rehydrate the bird and replace lost vitamins and that kind of thing. So don't be lulled to sleep by some of these things that have these crazy names. Like, you know, we have a prebiotic, basically. Product, and that would be the Chick Saver. That's a different ball game. It's got everything you need. It's got protein in it. It's got a probiotic in it. It's got vitamins, electrolytes, the whole nine yards. It's got everything you need in it to sustain a chick right off the bat. And so that's a different ball game. So you can't confuse that with just a vitamin electrolyte compound. And a catchy name isn't always an effective product at the end of the day. It's what's in it that get to reading labels and finding out, you know, what the true story is behind something before you make your purchase, you'd be a lot better off. But vitamins and electrolytes, a good product. The timing of it when you use it, for the most part, is up to you. Whether you use it certainly is up to you. I'm a fan of it to a degree. In its place, like I said, when it's hot out, when birds are stressed, moving, showing, all of these kinds of things are huge, huge stresses on birds. I like to see vitamin electrolyte compounds, maybe even some amino acids added, and those kinds of things to a breeder bird's water prior to collecting eggs, because if there is a deficiency in those breeders in any way, shape, or form, the more eggs they lay, the greater the chance of the chicks developing problems, either not hatching, infertile, or hatching with abnormalities, curled toes, crooked legs, all kinds of things. So when you look at it from that standpoint, they have their place. It's just that, you know, I believe in trying to head things off before they become huge, monumental problems. So in that case of breeders, I would, 2 weeks before I put these birds together for collecting hatching eggs, I would put the appropriate amount in the drinking water of whatever compound you want to use, and I would run that day in, day out for 10 days to 2 weeks, and then I would run it during that breeding cycle. I would run it basically every other day. And one of the reasons I wouldn't run it every day is that, again, we get back to that salt problem, and I don't want to have a problem there, because there is salt in their feed as well, okay? If you're feeding a whole food that you get a complete ration from the feed store. So in that case, to me, it's warranted. I've seen too many times where people have put the birds together and you don't find out. I mean, look, it's 3 weeks after you collect the first group of eggs, and we never think it's the breeders. We always look at incubation and everything else. And in some cases, it's true. A problem with the incubator, or the burner didn't turn, or the power went off, or the kids keep opening the incubator. Or there's all kinds of problems that lead to problems with birds not hatching. But in a lot of cases, it is chicks that are fully formed, too weak to get out of the shell, can't make the spin in the shell to and, you know, last year we did a whole series on this. I think Bridget did some stuff on it recently. But by and large, if the breeding stock is in good shape they're healthy and they're getting the proper feed and everything else, supplementing them is not a no-no, because they are burning up the vitamins and electrolytes, the calcium and everything else to lay down that structure on that eggshell, and their vitamin A and D and so on are being used up pretty rapidly. And if it's not being replaced pretty quickly, then you start getting birds that, you know, are weak and dead in the shell and that kind of thing. So they have their place, and certainly that's the place that I would look to use them. And we've had tremendous success with the products that we sell here. Doesn't mean you can't get something somewhere else. I don't want people to think I'm out here hawking my products. That's not it. You know, you'll buy wherever you want to buy. But at the end of the day, you know, just think about where you want to use it, how you want to use it, why you want to use it. I think why means more to me than anything. You know, people call me all the time, even with antibiotics. You know, I want to use an antibiotic on my birth to prevent you know, a particular disease. Well, I'm not up for that. I don't think it's a good idea. But, you know, if you want to do it, it's up to you. But I don't condone that kind of stuff. I don't think it's a good idea. But, you know, when you look at these things, again, using a sulfa drug, sulfadimethoxine, there's a lot of folks out there that are big fans of Sulmet. I'm not. Those deplete some of the vitamins quicker than others. Biotin. And that's where you get skin abnormalities, breaks in the skin and breaking down of the skin and so on and so forth. You get a breakdown of the an absorption of vitamin K. You get birds that might bleed easier, or in the case of coccidiosis, may bleed through the intestinal wall more easily because of the fact that you're using that sulfa drug. So you might want to come back behind that after you've treated for coccidiosis, whether you use Ampryl or you've used Sulmet or sulfadimethoxine or Dimethox or Albon or any of those. And you might want to come back and just, you know, for a few days, give them a supplement and a drinking water. It doesn't hurt. It's cheap. It's easy to do. It's not a big deal. Keep the water clean. Don't let junk grow in it. And I think you'll be able to move on and do very well you know, with those types of supplements in the water. Andy, I don't know when you want to end. I got about 10 minutes still, so I don't know if you've got anything you want to do. We can go off on the rest of it next time around, get into the minerals and chelated, non-chelated, and so on if you want.
No, that'll be fine. Yeah, we'll continue this on Monday. That sounds really good, and a lot of great comments in the chat room about appreciating you talking about the Merricks. And it was, again, current events on a particular blog or forum, and wanted to make that correction. And it's always good to review, of course, especially when people are starting to get tons and tons of baby chicks. And, oh, should I vaccinate, not vaccinate? What does it do? How do I do it if I'm going to do it myself? And things like that. So everybody appreciated that. Didn't have a problem with us getting to the additive a little bit later, because the initial information was wonderful. So, yeah, we can continue that next Monday and maybe follow up with another short topic. Or maybe next Monday, we haven't done it in a while. Maybe we'll do a Q&A. Maybe we'll finish up on supplements and then the last part of the show do Q&A. And on Monday, I'll just start posting folks to ask or post any questions they may have for you for that Monday show. So we'll just do that on Monday. So that sounds really
good. Sounds good to me.
I hope you have a fabulous week, and we'll see you back here in 7 days.
Okie doke. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you so much. All righty, that's Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Found him online. Find him online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com. At least in my opinion, if they don't have it, you don't need it. And go take a look from anything from the oxine to the vaccines to pinless peepers to an awesome emergency medicine kit. Not necessarily a first aid kit. He's working on that. But an emergency medicine kit where you've got some medicine involved versus the Band-Aids and the ointments. He's got some medicine involved there. That's a really great value. And the cool thing is everything you buy comes with specific directions for your flock. Can't get that anywhere else, I'm telling you. So firststatevetsupply.com. Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, and that's going to wrap up another great show here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And it looks like I'm getting a last-minute message here from Talking Chicken Scratch, and Jessica's wanting to know, hey, do you want to give away one of my chicken keychains? And maybe she can post a link to a picture of her chicken keychains in the in the chat room. That would be great. And welcome. Lynette's joining us in the chat room now. Maybe she's been there. I hadn't noticed. And she said, hey, wonderful show. Thank you very much, Lynette. John is, a first-time listener. Thank you. And we had another, I think, first-time listener earlier. Let me see if I can get this link posted in the chat room. We can give away a prize here before we – let's see if that's going to let me copy and paste. Okay, there. She just pasted it. I'm going to click on it and go over here and take a look at one of these. Those things are really cool. So if you're joining us in the chat room, click on that link really quick, and you'll see that fun chicken keychain there. And, Jessica has it up now, and very good. And perfect. So there, thank you very much for posting that. And that is Talking Chicken Scratch. And you can why don't you post the information in there too, Jessica, about your Facebook page and your website. I think you have a website / blog. And you do all kinds of great stuff. You have soaps and necklaces and bracelets and all kinds of cute little stuff. Not like you would see it. Tiffany's, of course, who's got that kind of money, but cute little trinkets for you chicken lovers out there. So very, very, very good. And she posted some soap yesterday that she was giving away. We sent a bunch of our fans over to her page yesterday, and she had some rooster soap. And I don't know if that was rooster soap on a rope or what it was, but we had a little bit of laugh about that off the message board there about rooster soap, and I'll let your own minds run wild with that. So, we'll give away a prize there. From in fact, Thompson says they liked your Facebook page last night, probably when I had posted about Talking Chicken Scratch wants to give away some prizes to my fans. Hey, who doesn't like free stuff? So you headed over there, and I think she's giving away a bunch of prizes tonight over there at Talking Chicken Scratch. So no big trivia questions, no hard thinking, no nothing like that, no reaching into the question pot. We're just going to give one of those chicken keychains away. And let's just go ahead and do this. Let's just open up the phone lines, and we'll see. We'll take caller number, oh, I don't know, the first number that came to mind was 19. Caller number 19, 347-637-3237. If you're listening live right now, thanks to all the homeschoolers that listen live to this radio show and incorporate this show with their curriculum. Love the homeschoolers. Love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. All the over-the-road truck drivers that not only listen live, but listen to the archive when they can, even at 3 a.m. Thank you. Keep the rubber on the road and drive safe out there. All the feed and seed stores that stream this radio show live every day in their stores, we thank you very much for doing that. We hope business as well this spring for your Big Chick Days events. And thank you for tuning in, and all the live and archive listeners that listen to the show, we thank you as well. So call number 19 right now, very simple. Just dial 347-637-3237. I'm not going to ask you any hard, difficult trivia questions, chicken check questions. Movie trivia, TV trivia, commercial trivia, Americana trivia, nothing like that. All you have to do is be the right caller right now. 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. Call right now. Home phone, cell phone, Skype, whatever you want to do. Give us a call. If you're caller number 19, then you're going to win this awesome chicken keychain from my good friends over there at Talkin' Chicken Scratch. Yes! Yes. Hang on. Let me answer this. There we go. Okay, perfect. I'd respond to that a little instant message that was sent over here to me. So, oh, my goodness. Okay, so 347-637-3237. I'm trying to see what that says, and I can't quite read it. So let me see if I can make this screen a little bit bigger. Alrighty. Okay, let's go over here to the phone lines and see what we got. Oh, I see. She's got a, I think that's a Duck Dynasty shirt. Psy is my role model. I think that's what it says. I guess that's Psy. Is that someone from Duck Dynasty? And, yep. Okay. Okay, cool. Alrighty. Let me get over here to the phone lines. Call number 19. Heading to the phone lines right now. Call number 19, you're live on the air, calling in from area code 260-260. State your name and tell us what state you're calling from, please.
Hello, it's Gerald. Fort
Gerald.
Wayne, Indiana.
From Indiana, Gerald from Indiana. Congratulations, you were caller number 19 today, and you have won an awesome chicken keychain from Talking Chicken Scratch and on Facebook. And she also has a blog and website, I guess. But congratulations. You were the lucky caller. Appreciate you calling in and listening today. What I need you to do is to claim your prize, okay? Because you're not going to get your prize if I don't know where to send it. Please send that to – let's do this one here. It'll be easier to get over to her. Chicken Whisperer at chickenwhisperer.net. It's a double-double there. Chicken Whisperer at chickenwhisperer.net. And if you'll put Talking Chicken Scratch in the subject line, Gerald, that'll be great. Talking Chicken Scratch. Put that in the subject line. And then I'll need your name, shipping address, and phone number in there so we can get that information. And she'll mail that right out to you. So send that over to Chicken Whisperer at chickenwhisperer.net. And then put Talking Chicken Scratch in the subject line, please. And then name, shipping address, and phone number in the email itself. I'll get that over to Jessica. And she'll send that over to you as soon as she possibly can. So very, very good. All righty, folks, that's going to wrap up another great show here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Thank you very much for tuning in. Hey, tomorrow, let me tell you about this great week we have as we wrap up. Tomorrow, 90 seconds left, as the lady says in my little ear here. Tomorrow, we may have the CDC coming on talking about salmonella and Easter on Wednesday. Garden Wise Living with Arlena, of course. Always glad to have Arlena on. Thursday, Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, will be joining us talking all about natural indoor pest control. And then Friday is another great fun Friday. So again, we hope all of you have a wonderful day today. We hope to see you tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody.
Oh.